or 50s.
Quiet, please, ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
What does it take to make sure that you are a U.S. citizen in the state of Washington?
Yeah, not very damn much. Now, that young lady is Senator Maria Cantwell, and I'm not at all proud of the fact that for decades, that woman has, at least in theory, represented me and about 8 million other people in the state of Washington. And along with her Democrat colleagues, she is making the argument against passing the SAVE Act. I think the Democrats finally realized that Donald Trump is absolutely serious about getting that piece of legislation passed, that the House of Representatives has voted on it twice. And the basic idea is simple enough for even a child, not Maria Cantwell, but a child could understand this idea. It says, if you're going to vote in an American election, you must be, number one, an American citizen, or you can't vote. You must have picture ID, or you can't vote. And your ballot must arrive on election day by the close of business, or you can't vote. Well, all of this seems to get past U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell, and I wanted to go through the arguments she's making because she's working off the same set of plans that the entire Democrat Party is trying to follow right now. Well, Donald Trump is saying we need to pass this to save American elections, and I'll explain to you why Senator Maria Cantwell doesn't at all know what she's talking about. But first, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get you your phone calls and emails. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, and I imagine I might get some naysayers today, some people who believe that the SAVE Act is going to be the end of voting for 21 million people. Well, it may be. And in fact, Maria Cantwell says that's exactly what will happen, that 21 million people will not vote if the SAVE Act passes. And I say, good. I'm glad. I don't want them voting. If they are not American citizens, if they don't have picture ID, they should not be voting at all. But Senator Maria Cantwell, member of the Democrat Party, boy, the Democrats needed their slaves in the 1800s, and they fought a war over it, and they lost. And the Democrats need their current slaves today, and that is illegal aliens, and they're going to lose this one as well. So, want to send an email? talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you want to vote in our poll on X, you'll find the daily question every day at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. But let me get back to what Senator Maria Cantwell is arguing, because they realize that Donald Trump is not going to take no for an answer. That even if they have to blow up that filibuster over in the U.S. Senate, there are the votes to pass the SAVE Act. Now, I'm hearing all the excuses from the rhinos like John Thune that say, oh, no, we don't have the votes. Look, you're the bunch that keeps telling American conservatives, if we only had a majority in the House, we'd get something done. Well, you do. If we only had a majority in the U.S. Senate, well, you do. If we only had a Republican president willing to sign this kind of legislation, well, you do. You have all of those things, and if you then want to make excuses as to why you can't get the job done, then get out of the way and clear the deck for somebody else to take your way. But listen to this crazy argument made by Senator Maria Cantwell about the fact that we know these people are citizens. Why? Well, because they said so. You know, you have to take their self-attestation. Listen to the argument.
Every ballot, just like mine, says, read the declaration. I am a United States citizen. It says it right there. Every time you vote in the state of Washington, punishable by the maximum of imprisonment of 5 years or $10,000 in fine.
Yeah, except that nobody ever gets prosecuted for those crimes. Even when they have drop-dead proof of those cases, they don't prosecute them. And I'm talking about cases I know about. I mean, one case in particular within the last year, a woman who admitted, yes, I'm a foreign citizen. No, I'm not a U.S. citizen. I am registered to vote. I know it's illegal. I voted in half a dozen elections, and that's handed to the prosecutor. And the prosecutor, being a Democrat, says, I am not going to go after these people. So when Maria Cantwell says, well, we know they're citizens because they said so. They signed their name right there. You know, the last time that a police officer pulled you over in your car, if the officer walked up and said, do you have a driver's license? And you said, yes, but not with me. I want to attest that I have a driver's license. You'll just have to take my word for it. Do you think that would work? If you walked into a bank and said, I'd like to open up a bank account here so I can write checks and deposit money and all that. And the bank said, let's see some picture ID. And you said, I don't have any, but I'm willing to attest that I have the picture ID under penalty of perjury. Do you think the bank would accept that? That is the kind of nonsense that Maria Cantwell argues. And then she says, it's not reasonable to do what the Republicans are asking, which is make the people who want to vote prove who they are.
And somehow people on this side of the aisle think that immigrants who won't even go to the healthcare system, won't even go to the grocery store, are afraid to take their kids to school, and somehow you think they are signing up for a felony or $10,000 or imprisonment of 5 years? No, they're not doing that.
Let me tell you the difference. And apparently it's too much for a brainiac, a rocket scientist like U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell to understand. Who is enforcing the rules when it comes to being in the country illegally? Well, that would be Donald Trump, the deporter in chief, who promised voters, I will have the biggest mass deportation in history. Yes, illegal aliens are afraid of that. And who is enforcing the rules that say if you sign on the line and you sign up in Maria Cantwell's state, the state of Washington, and you sign up as a voter and what you're saying is a lie, that you are not a citizen, that you are not eligible to vote. Do you know who's enforcing those rules? Other Democrats like Maria Cantwell. Now, do you know who the illegals are afraid of? They're afraid of ICE and CBP under President Donald Trump, the deporter in chief. You know who they're not afraid of? They are not afraid of Maria Cantwell. They are not afraid of Patty Murray. They are not afraid of Democrat attorneys general, Democrat governors, Democrat prosecutors, because they know that they're not going to be prosecuted by those people. So why are they afraid to go to the grocery store? Because they might get picked up by ICE, because ICE is actually run by a president who wants America's laws enforced. Why are they not afraid to vote illegally? Because they know you aren't going to get caught, and even if you do, you won't be prosecuted. Listen to the senator again.
Because this system is checked, it's validated, it's verified. You have to attest to it. And so we have very, 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 very,
very, very, very, very.
And when we do, we catch it. Why are we changing a system that has been in place for decades and replacing it? Because my colleagues say the trend is going in the wrong direction, which is simply not true. It is about disenfranchising millions of people and making it very hard for them to vote.
Well, if they're not citizens, they shouldn't be voting at all. And when Maria Cantwell says, we know it's true. Why? Because these voters who are illegal aliens are signing on the line and they say it's true. So Maria Cantwell buys the idea of self-attestation, that if an illegal alien will sign on a dotted line because he knows he's not going to be prosecuted, that that proves that he is a citizen eligible to vote for a Democrat like Maria Cantwell. Back in a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The equipment donations, free officer survival training, cash donations, and condolence letters to the family of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty. USDSA also offers college scholarships for the dependent children of law enforcement, along with a citizen awareness program and thank you cards to law enforcement. These are just some of the ways United States Deputy Sheriff's Association assists America's law enforcement and the citizens they serve. For more information about United States Deputy Sheriff's Association or to see how you can help, visit www.usdeputy.org. United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, taking training to the next level, because lives are on the line.
Welcome to the Barn on Auction.
Barn on Auction is selling thousands of items this Friday, March 27th in Woodburn. Large farming and construction equipment, cars, trucks, and industrial supplies, all sold to the highest bidder. Auctions are open to the public. Visit barnonauction.com.
I'm good.
Local, national, Lars has you covered. Call him from anywhere. 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Well, America's Democrat Party surely handed the conservatives some real favors in the last couple of days. First, they jammed up the security lines for almost 3 million daily air travel passengers at America's airports. You've seen the mess. Democrats did that by refusing to fund the Department of Homeland Security. I know, it sounds like a crazy thing to do. Now, what Democrats really wanted was they wanted to shut down Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Did they do that by defunding DHS? They did not. But did they create all kinds of chaos? Yes, they did. Only the agency, ICE, is already fully funded, so shutting down DHS funding didn't really do the trick. So with TSA airport security staffers unpaid and calling in sick, President Trump sent ICE agents to the airports. Almost immediately yesterday, the wait times at places like Atlanta's massive international airport dropped to less than 1 hour. In fact, even CNN correspondent Ryan Young was forced to whine live on CNN on air to Wolf Blitzer, quote, "I almost can't believe I'm able to say this, but wait times have dropped tremendously to less than an hour." Meanwhile, social media videos of harried travelers thanking ICE agents for helping out didn't exactly help the Democrats' efforts to demonize anybody who's involved in enforcement of immigration law. On Capitol Hill, the D party now seems desperate to cut a deal to end the DHS defunding. Only President Trump knows how to play hardball, too. The deporter-in-chief demands that Democrats agree to pass the SAVE Act that requires picture ID and citizenship to vote. Shakespeare must have had the Democrat Party in mind when he wrote about being hoisted by his own petard in Hamlet. Our question of the day, which I'll give you in a moment. First, if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Naysayers go to the head of the line. Send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. And you can vote in our poll on X. Now, the daily poll question that we put up every single day from the news of the day, should the U.S. government have the power to turn away asylum seekers at the border? Well, the Supreme Court heard the arguments, and they appeared yesterday based on the questions being asked by the justices that they are likely to rule in favor of President Trump. Now, when is that ruling going to come? Probably June or early July of this summer. But here's the question. Can the government turn away asylum seekers when officials deem U.S.-Mexico border crossings have too overburdened the border to handle additional claims? It makes sense. And in fact, I love the line that came from one of the people. You can't arrive in the United States if you're still standing in Mexico. That should be the end of this case. The Supreme Court has a 6-3 conservative majority. Most of the conservative justices, and get this, at least one of the liberal justices appears sympathetic toward the Trump administration's position. The ruling in the case expected, as I said, by the end of June. Now, if your calls are welcome, 866-HEY-LARS. Our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, and get better fast at Multnomah Medical Clinic. I decided to make this suggestion. It comes in, and I'll hold the name back, of the 13-year-old who sent this to me. And I've heard the suggestion before, but it's a good one. He said, "Lars, my name is blank. I'm 13, and I'd like to stay anonymous in fear of my schoolmates' parents' retaliation. I would like to suggest that Donald Trump change the name of ICE to NICE, the National Immigration and Customs Enforcement. That way, when the Democrats oppose immigration enforcement, they'd have to say things like, stomp out NICE, stop NICE, NICE out, and we hate NICE. Love your show. And he signed it, but I'll leave his name out of the mess. My favorite post on X today, Glenn writes in, Lars, if you want to know how the war in Iran is going, the barometer I use is congressional members' stock trades on Wall Street, signed Glenn. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
Well, for all the reasons that I cited at the top of the hour, I'm going to give today's Daily Grill to U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell and all of her Democrat friends for defending illegal voting in America. And if you say, well, how many illegals are voting right now? Well, according to U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell, there are 21 million people who would be cut out of voting if the SAVE Act is passed. So I'll tell you what, in that case, I'll take the Democrats' word for it. The number of illegal voters is 21 million. Is that bad enough that we should get some kind of solution? Now, this one is our best email of the day so far, but you can send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Dear Lars, my name is Darren. I'll listen to your show. I want to share a simple idea to help teachers stop indoctrinating our kids. Install cameras in every classroom and stream the live feed online so anybody can watch. Use AI to automatically blur or filter out the kids' faces to protect them from pedophiles. The teacher's face stays clear so people can see what is really being taught. This would let parents see exactly what their kids are learning. Kids and parents should go back and review the lessons for homework. It would also provide clear proof if a child is misbehaving or a teacher is being unfair. When a parent comes in for a meeting, the teacher could unfilter just that parent's child so they could see how their kid is acting. It's a simple way to bring transparency and accountability to our schools. Would you talk about this on your show? Well, Darren, I just did. I think it's a reasonably good idea. It's probably got some issues that need to be worked out. I would love to see a live stream of every classroom in America. Do you remember what happened just 5 years ago during the pandemic when an awful lot of parents were told your kid is going to have to learn remotely and they had to set the system up very quickly? And there were teachers that absolutely blew a gasket. They said, we can't let the parents see what's being taught in the classrooms. And we found out very quickly why those teachers were so anxious to make sure that parents did not see what was being taught in the classrooms. And the reason was, they'd realize how much indoctrination those kids are going through, and they would object to it, and they have. And that's why so many parents, millions of them, have decided to pull their kids out of the failing and failed public schools. Back in a moment. It's Wednesday. Portland's river has been a toxic mess for 25 years, but now there may be a less expensive way of cleaning it all up. We'll talk to our friend Nigel Jaquess in just a moment. You've got the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Larson Show on X at Lars Larson Show. You never know what he'll post. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. I want to talk about one of the Pacific Northwest signature rivers, and that is the Willamette River. It also has endangered species in it, like salmon. And it's been a mess for decades and decades. And now we're finally getting to the point where it might get cleaned up. And only now, it sounds like, are they starting to think outside the box. And speaking of outside the box, Nigel Jaquess joins me now. Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter at Willamette Week and also at the Oregon Journalism Project. Nigel, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Lars.
It sounds like, having read your entire story, and it's a very good read, you can find it at WWeek.com and also at the Oregon Journalism Project, this long, long-time problem with cleanup of Ross Island, which is currently owned by, you know, Bob Pamplin Jr. There's a whole scam behind that where he attempted to sell it for high dollars to a pension plan that was supplying his employees with pensions. That's another story you've dogged very well. But they have to fill a big hole there. And at the same time, there are other parts of the river that have been a Superfund site for a long time, and they need to figure out where to put all those spoils, or where could they be safely encapsulated and kept away from the environment. And these two big problems could be put together and solve each other. Is that fair to, is that a fair way to sum it up?
Yes, it is. So in 2000, the federal EPA named the Portland Harbor Superfund site, that's 10 miles basically from Sovia Island to the Broadway Bridge in downtown Portland. You know, a century of industrial activity on the riverfront had left a lot of contaminated soil on the bottom. Similarly, Ross Island was mined from 1926 to 2001. They dug a hole 130 feet deep in the bottom of the river and pulled out a bunch of the aggregate, sand, and gravel that built this city of Portland. So now Bob Pampin appears not to have the money to refill the hole. He has agreed with the state repeatedly to do so. And the Superfund site, after 26 years of process, is ready to start getting rid of the contaminated soil. And the estimate, Lars, is that it would take 200,000 truckloads of soil, which would go up the Columbia River Gorge out to the Wasco County landfill and to other landfills in Central Oregon at an enormous expense. They're talking $4 to $7 billion to get rid of this stuff. Or they could put it on some barges and move it a couple of miles up the river and drop it in the hole in Ross Island.
Sounds like a good solution. Why didn't somebody come up with this beforehand?
I think these two problems have been treated as independent and separate, and there hasn't been a lot of communication. I think now that the responsible parties, those are the people whose companies polluted the river, are looking at this enormous price tag, they're thinking of any way to mitigate or lessen that cost, which is totally understandable. Some of them this past summer went to EPA and said, hey, could we do that? And somewhat to my surprise, not only did EPA say, well, maybe even probably, but a lot of the environmental groups who you know, keep a close eye on the river because the river is a pretty delicate body of water, they seem to think it could work. They seem to think the science from other Superfund projects around the country in Boston, Tacoma, Hudson River, New York, have successfully been able to bury non-hazardous waste and cap it. So I should say it's very important to understand that of the 3 million cubic yards of sediment that they need to move out of the Superfund site, about 93% of that is categorized as non-hazardous. So the 7% that is hazardous is still going to have to go to a specialized landfill in Central Oregon, but a lot of that stuff could stay here.
Okay, and by the way, Nigel, over the years, as I've covered environmental issues like this, I remember a building, I think it was a government building, and I said, it's full of asbestos, isn't it? And they said, yeah, but we're still using the building. It's better to leave it where it is. And I said, well, how do you do that? And they said, we just encapsulate it. You know, you leave it on the pipes where it is, and taking it out would actually create a bigger mess than just leaving where it is and putting a bunch of plastic and tape over it. And that is, in fact, what they did. So this is not an unusual way to solve the problem. If you say we got 130-foot hole in the river and we need to fill the hole with something, we can fill it with this and then put other materials, heavier materials, on top of it that effectively caps it, and it stays there for the rest of time, right?
Yeah, that's the plan. And again, I'm not a scientist, but people who understand the science tell me that it's been done successfully in other, you know, sensitive bodies of water around the country. So you know, it seems like it takes care of a lot of problems. One problem I didn't mention in the story, but you'll be very familiar with, is the algal blooms that come up every summer when the river water heats up, particularly in that lagoon, because it's pretty stagnant in that lagoon.
Right.
So they're hopeful that that problem could be solved also. And Ross Island, which looks like an industrial wasteland now because all the processing machinery is still out there rusting, that could all be cleaned up and turned into a nature reserve. So there are a lot of positive outcomes, including saving a lot of money and just finally dealing with the Superfund issue.
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you what, look, I used to spend a lot more time on the river than I do now. I don't have a boat, but looking at Ross Island, the only part that bothers me is the nature preserve part of this, Nigel, because I think that's a great asset. I wish they were, it was possible to open it up so that people from, you know, from the rest of the Pacific Northwest could take boats from downtown Portland out to that island, you know, and have some, you know, presence there for restaurants or whatever, you know, to allow people to really enjoy it. Now, I know the total nature types are going to say, oh, no, it's only for people with binoculars. You can go out and watch things, but you don't touch. I'd much rather make it something that's very attractive to get people to come to it and actually enjoy it the way an awful lot of other rivers around the Northwest are enjoyed, sometimes in ways that don't make the environmentalists all that happy, like river rafting and things like that. But it does attract a lot more people.
Well, look, in the 20s, that was basically an amusement park. It had a big swimming dock. It had restaurants. It had all kinds of things. So
there you go. Let's do that. Let's do that.
Public process.
Yeah, as long as you don't let the hippies take it over, Nigel, because I want to see the environmental problem solved. I want to see it solved as least expensively as possible. And if you can open it up and turn it back to what it was and say, gee, you can invite people to go out there and enjoy a boat ride or go swimming or whatever, and not just make it, I mean, like Government Island to me, you know, in the middle of the Columbia River seems like a giant waste. All those acres, and yes, you can go out there if you get in a canoe or a kayak and go across the Columbia River. You can get out there. Otherwise, there's almost no public access to it at all. And you say it's public land that the public can't get to. Nigel, the story was a great read, and I'll recommend that people take a look at it at WWIG.com.
Thanks, Lars.
You betcha. That's Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Nigel Jaquez. Now, imagine that, when you can actually solve a problem and spend less money solving it than you thought you were going to have to spend. I think that's a terrific outcome for everything. So, should they take the problem and maybe solve one problem by pouring one problem into a big hole that solves another problem? Coming up in a moment, Washington State handing out zero-interest home loans based on your skin color. Is that legal? No. Probably not. We'll talk about that next. With
take a peek inside Lars's studio. Follow him on Instagram at the Lars Larson Show. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Wednesday. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. Our X poll today: should the U.S. government have the power to turn away asylum seekers at the border? In other words, somebody shows up, let's say, at America's southern border, somewhere in Mexico. They're standing there in Mexico, and they say, I'd like to claim asylum because I'm inside your country. No, you're not. You're in Mexico right now. If you want asylum, why don't you get asylum from Mexico? You've already left the country that was persecuting you. You can stay in Mexico. Instead, they want to have the ability to come into the United States. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court is hearing the case about whether or not President Trump is able to turn away asylum seekers when officials decide that the crossings at the U.S.-Mexico border are just simply too much of a burden to deal with. Our poll on X can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, let's go first to Ron. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Hey, I just wanted to say that I've been listening to your show now for, boy, it seems like over 20 years.
Thank you for that.
You know?
I appreciate it. But you had something on your mind.
Yeah, since you've become a pro-death pedophile protector, I really
pro
can't
death?
Listen to you anymore.
What? How am I pro-death?
Over Gaza and Trumpstein and the Epstein files.
Hold on. I'm trying to understand what you're saying. I'm a pro-death pedophile protector. Who's the pedophile, Ron?
Oh, well, all lots of them. Are you not familiar with the Epstein files?
I talk about the Epstein files on the show when there's something new to say. What about them?
Epstein? Feel like you really don't. That's another thing, too, is you really haven't been bringing
Ron,
up.
Ron, you don't listen
like,
to the show much, do you?
The main topics.
Ron,
like,
you don't listen to the show much, because if you did, you know that we have talked about the Epstein files endlessly, and when there is something new to say about them, I'm glad to make a comment about them. But why would you call? You actually told, did you tell the producer of this show that you wanted to talk about voter ID? If you lied to the producer, Ron, I'd like you to at least admit that you lied to the producer.
No, the voter ID, Lars, is obvious.
What is obvious?
With Trump's polling numbers and the Republicans' polling numbers, you would have to be a moron to think they weren't trying to control the election.
Well, hold on, Ron, how does it benefit? Oh, boy. You know what? Ron is one of these people who believes, I can't win the argument with facts, so I'll simply talk over the other person. I'm not going to do that. I think Donald Trump has said, we have to save American elections. How are the Democrats cheating? Well, they admit that they're cheating. They say, we want 21 million people to vote. And that's the number that Maria Cantwell used. I referred to her less than an hour ago. She says that if the U.S. Senate passes the SAVE Act and requires picture ID and proof of citizenship to vote, that 21 million people will not be able to cast ballots. And I said, that's good, because if there are 21 million people who are currently voting in our elections and they cannot prove that they're citizens and they don't have picture ID, Ron, can you tell me why they should be voting if they're not citizens and they can't prove who they are?
This is what your listeners need to hear, right? It's horrible. You took 101, which was, you know, our favorite rock station, and you literally took that format.
Now we're talking about a change in use. Okay. I think Ron has a beef because he liked to listen to rock and roll on the one of the stations that we're on. Our flagship station is FM News 101 KXL, and it has been on 101 for more than a decade. And apparently Ron is living in the past. He can't stand the idea that he can no longer listen to rock and roll there, even though today there are far more places to hear rock and roll music on the internet, on Spotify, on various news or music services and everything else. But Ron is bent out of shape because of that. So I'm not sure if his issue is illegal aliens, pedophiles, human trafficking, or the SAVE Act. My issue is the SAVE Act. I want to see the Congress pass it. Let's go to Alma. Alma, you are one of my favorite naysayers. I appreciate you calling from the affluent community of Kenmore. Alma, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, honey. You probably won't like me when I say this, but you guys are protecting a pedophile. Trump is a pedophile. He's done these things. It looked like all of
No, Alma, a pedophile is somebody who likes sex with children. How is pedophile?
Lars.
Yes.
Look, if you read the Epstein file, you read any of that.
I've read lots. I cannot claim that I've read all 5 million pages of the Epstein files, but I think I know the high points. What part of it says that Donald Trump is somebody who seeks to have illegal sex with children?
Well, all of it. Just about all of it shows. But can I ask you this? Donald Trump has done so many good things. You guys uphold it. That's not very godly. But I guess that's just the way it is. Republicans used to be real firm. And Lars, I think I remember listening to you back in the day, and I think you were more liberal. I've been listening to you a long
time.
That's
your imagination, Alma. That's your imagination. But tell me this. If I've answered a question, will you answer some questions for me?
Yes.
Okay. The SAVE Act says that to be able to vote, you must be a citizen and have picture ID. Now, Alma, I think I've guessed accurately, you are a woman of color, are you not?
Yes. Oh,
you're
sure
a black,
yes,
you're
ma'am.
A black woman. Now, the Democrats tell me that black women are not smart enough to get a driver's license. Do you have a driver's license?
Well, let me ask you, just like you asked me about Trump, how can you prove that?
How can I prove I have a driver's license? I pull it out of my pocket.
Well, then, how can you prove that? You asked me to prove something about
No,
Trump.
I'm just asking you, Alma, do you have a driver's license?
Every black woman I know has a driver's license.
Well, but hold on, then. Why do your Democrat friends, and I suspect you're a Democrat as well, why do the Democrats say that black people aren't smart enough to get a driver's license?
But see, that's hearsay. That's only hearsay, honey. But you
no,
know
it's
what
not. I mean, I've got sound bites of major Democrats saying it.
Can you just get two things that I
Yeah. But everyone is not saying that, honey. But let me say this here, Lord, you're a fair man. The election is not, that's not saved yet. That's still the election. It's not saved the vote. It's still the election from us.
Well, no, steal the election from people who can't vote. Alma, you're a citizen. You can vote. I'm a citizen. I can vote. The ones we don't want voting are the illegal aliens and the non-citizens.
The Lars Larson Show. Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at the level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Wednesday. My next guest is not a politician. In fact, she says that's one of the advantages she has. She is a veterinarian with a century of family roots in Northwest Oregon. And she says Congress needs fewer insiders and more people who can actually solve problems. So it's a pleasure to welcome to the program Dr. Barbara Call, who is running as the Republican candidate for Oregon's 1st Congressional District. Dr. Call, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Hi, Lars.
Hi. How are you doing? And I'm glad to hear it. Are you sure that with all that experience of dealing with animals that you're suited for the crowd on Capitol Hill?
Every animal has about 5 owners. So, yes, I think so.
Yeah, and in the case of Congress, we could talk about who owns them and who controls them. But what makes you think that you would make a great member of Congress? And I say that not in a pejorative way, Dr. Call, because I've always said I think that people who are professional politicians are bad. You know, that they are generally bad. And I like the ones like Donald Trump who come to the business and say, I've never been a politician. This is what I'm going to do. I have a lot more faith in them than the ones who've been around for a few decades.
Mm-hmm. So a bit of my background is I started a professional career actually at Intel Corporation working in the high tech sector, working as an administrator for purchasing and finance. So I've seen the big budgets. I've seen the things that occur on that side of the industry. I've had family members that work in construction. I have family members that work in the professional sector. I have family members currently in nursing. I have family members who have been in the teaching sector. And I get all of the input from these people. And being here for, you know, family roots for over 100 years, we see the things that are going on. We see the things that are not happening to support our families, the local small businesses that are key for every other business that exists in our area. We see that affordable housing is going away. And these are things that I can directly relate to because I had boots on the ground in the area. I have, again, direct correlation to family in the area and how it's impacting their ability to afford things, their ability to pay for health care, their ability to just survive. One of the things that I really want to promote is that livability matters no matter which side of the aisle you're on. And we have to get back to that to understand that basic fact.
Okay, so if you got a spot in the United States Congress, you'd be one a vote of 435. What are the things you think that the Congress could change the quickest to get solutions for that question of making life affordable and making a good quality of life for Americans? How much should the government be involved in that?
I think that fiscal responsibility has got to be a key factor in anything that Congress does. Currently, I see that Congress is spending money where it perhaps is not accounted for responsibly. It's not transparent.
You mean Minnesota? and, and and the similar in the Northwest as well?
Yes, and those are things that are easy to see. However, in my digging, as I'm a data junkie. I love to get into data. I love to find the facts. I love to bring that to light to see how we can improve for everyone. But yes, fiscal responsibility is huge. And again, the things easy to see are what mainstream media throws out there all the time. The things that aren't easy to see is what's happening in our own backyard. Mm-hmm. And the things that I've seen are just, they're not doing anything for this particular congressional district one. Currently, there's been several projects recently. One that did provide housing sector jobs that's coming up recently here. It'll be at Terminal 2. But then there's other things that are going on where we have put financial federal dollars, tax dollars into it. No jobs have been created. None. And with Intel having last summer, you know, 2,400 people were laid off, boom, just like that. They have no jobs to go to with the same benefits, the same pay, anything. And so we really need to focus on things where we have job creation in the area. It's really important to get that across to people.
You've been on a bunch of different subjects there, housing and then jobs. What role should the government play, if any, in jobs? Because I think the private sector is who provides jobs, and I think the government usually screws things up.
I would agree with that. The private sector needs to provide jobs, but the government needs to reduce the, how can I put this?
Cost?
They need to reduce, they need to reduce costs, they need to reduce their spending so that people who create the jobs can afford to actually do that. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't have government that continually adds on more regulation and more regulation and more regulation that dissuades business owners from wanting to stay and create those jobs. We have to be able to enable small businesses to thrive and not regulate them out of existence.
Yeah, and I think that is exactly what the government has been doing. That and the fact that when the government overspends, it has to borrow. And when the federal government is borrowing money and it sucks up all the available cash, then it means that interest rates are high for everybody else, not just for houses and cars, but for businesses that want to expand as well when the government is gobbling up all the available credit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And did you know there's something that's coming up here for Oregon that's really important?
The BLM
is currently working on the ONC land use plan, which is Oregon and California, where we've got, you know, this is going to benefit the foresters in Oregon. And I think it's going to also be environmentally wonderful for this area. So we are looking at being able to log off the federal forest with a managed plan, and in that managed plan, the foresters locally that I've talked to will not be going after those old growth trees. That's not their intent. They want lumber that can go into the economy, that can provide for lower housing, and at the same time maintain an equilibrium of supply and demand so that not only do we have continued supply of those forests, but we have demand met to create housing, which is going to bring the prices down.
And probably reduce the number of fires that happen every summer. I mean, Dr. Call, I want to visit with you more on this. Tell people where to find your website so they can learn more about your campaign.
Wonderful. You can find that at Dr. Call for Congress, drkahl4congress.com. That's where my website is at. I'm also available if you have questions. You can reach out email info@drcallforcongress.com, or you can reach me on text at drcallforcongress.com.
Very good. That is Dr. Barbara Call. She's running for Oregon's 1st Congressional District. Back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Selling your home.
This.
This is your home for honestly provocative talk radio. The truth every day. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get you your phone calls and emails. And now it seems that the Democrat governor of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, I know the big fat boy, I don't think he's going to run for president, but I think he thinks he may run for president one of these days. But now he's got a bit of a problem because an illegal alien has now been accused of killing an 18-year-old college student in that state, and he's being asked, are you going to hand over this illegal alien to ICE? And he's not exactly sure what to say, because as a Democrat, member of the Democrat Party, he's not sure whether he should say, you bet, I'm going to hand over that illegal alien killer, or no, we're going to hang on to the illegal alien killer so an American court can simply turn him loose on my community. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com and vote in our poll on X. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. Let me go first to Bruce. Hey, Bruce, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Lars. Yeah, thanks again for your show, but I was listening to you about the Real ID or the SAVE Act.
Yeah.
I'm a proponent of that bill because something's got to be done about this fraud. But I looked online and my AI program co-pilot, I asked it what IDs are acceptable under this proposed bill. And a driver's license is not acceptable.
It depends, Bruce. And I think you'll have to take a closer look at this. There are driver's licenses in America that are handed out to both illegal aliens and non-citizens. Then there are real ID compliant licenses. I happen to have one in my pocket. It costs an extra, I think it's an extra $20 every few years to be able to have an enhanced license that actually shows you are, you know, an American citizen. And so the reason they can't say that every driver's license would be sufficient is because there are states that hand out driver's licenses to illegal aliens. And you wouldn't want an illegal alien to be able to vote in an election, would you?
No, I understand. I couldn't believe it when I was reading this. It says that a real ID is not acceptable. It has to be an enhanced that shows your citizenship on it.
Correct. And isn't that the whole point, Bruce? Because this is when I get naysayer callers, especially from the left, and they say, we don't like the SAVE Act. And I say, well, what part of it don't you like? The part that says, if you're not a citizen, you shouldn't be able to vote in an election. And they say, no, I like that part. I say, what about picture ID to prove that you are who you claim to be? I mean, think about all the times where you're asked to prove who you are. I mean, these days, if you open up a bank account, you have to show picture ID to show who you are. If you go to the airport and you want to fly somewhere, you better have real ID, compliant ID that will let you get on an airplane. If you get pulled over by the cops, do they simply accept it? If you say, take my word for it, I have a driver's license. I just don't happen to have it with me today. So you just have to take my attestation that I have a driver's license. Is there any cop in America who would take that?
Yeah, no way. Okay. I just wanted to clear that up because these AI programs can be wrong.
Well, I'll tell you what, the AI programs are wrong a lot of the time, Bruce. And there are people who are ending up getting in big trouble because they don't pay attention to what the AI tells them. One thing is true. In fact, I just saw a lawyer who just got fined because he went to court and he cited a bunch of cases that he didn't bother to look up. He had the AI, the artificial intelligence, look them up, and the AI was wrong. And the judge hit him with a whopping big fine for that. Let's go to George. Hey, George, welcome to the program. What's on your mind? Hey, George.
Yeah, how are you?
What's on your mind, George? Are you paying attention?
No, I'm not paying attention, Lars. I was listening to you. But anyway, buddy, I'd like to put a little input on fuel prices.
Yes.
it's really funny because I feel that the oil companies are definitely ripping us off. Because of the fact is, as I was in the oil fields in North Dakota for 8 months.
Yeah.
And there's too much. There's a lot of oil that's pumped in the United States. We shouldn't be buying one drop of oil from anywhere in the world.
Even if it's geographically more accessible?
I'm sorry?
Even if it is geographically more accessible. In other words, if you want to bring oil, let's say, if you live in the Gulf states, the Gulf of America, then you're going to be able to buy oil that is, say, pumped out of the ground in Oklahoma and then refined at refineries on the Gulf of America. But what happens if you have to have oil and you don't have supply that is nearby? How are you going to get it if you don't buy it from somewhere else? I would say that the vast majority of our oil is produced by the United States from the United States, but occasionally it's more geographically convenient to bring it in from somewhere else. Does that make sense?
Well, it does to a point, Lars. I can understand bringing in maybe dark black oil that they would mix with the crude coming out of North Dakota or even Texas.
Yeah.
Because the crude that's coming out of the Bakken fields in North Dakota, if you look at it in a jar, it looks like gold. It's pure, you know, I could run it in my diesel truck right out of the ground.
Okay, but George, what I'm not understanding, you started by saying the oil companies are ripping us off. So you're telling me that the oil companies are voluntarily getting ripped off themselves and getting charged more than they should pay, and they're saying, oh, we're not going to buy that cheap American oil. We're going to buy expensive stuff from somewhere else. I'm trying to understand your conspiracy theory that the oil companies are ripping us off.
I totally understand. Let me clarify something.
Okay.
If I'm an oil company, which is Standard and all the most of the oil companies, they pump their own oil. They have their own oil. So if you
then why would they buy more expensive stuff from elsewhere?
Because of the fact that the only thing that they have to buy from anywhere else is the black dark oil, so they can mix it to make fuel for back east, right? That runs in the for your heating.
I'm not entirely understanding that, George. And why it would make sense for them to artificially pay more for the oil, then somehow ship it all the way back to the northeastern states for fuel oil? I don't understand that theory. Send me an email, George. I'd be glad to take a look at
it. The Lars Larson Show. Larson Show today? Find Lars's thoughts and get the podcast right now at LarsLarson.com. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I'm always glad to take your phone calls and emails. We'll get to those in just a moment. But imagine this. Imagine being an American who spent 420 days as a hostage of the Taliban. And then in January of this year, a young lady by the name of Katie Pavlich is talking to President Trump on the air, live on the air, and she brings up the name of Dennis Coyle. And the president says, I'll take care of that, saying, I'm not happy if somebody is being held against their will, if he's not guilty of anything. And sure enough, it seems he did take care of it. Katie Pavlich joins me now, the host of Katie Pavlich Tonight on News Nation. Katie, it's good to have you back on.
Great to be here. Thanks so much for having me, Lars. Great to talk to you.
Well, it's been a long time, but tell me this. Do you think that interview with Donald Trump back in January might have been the thing that did the trick for Dennis Coyle?
I think it certainly helped. I like to think that it helped. The president, 2 months after we talked to him in that interview and mentioned Dennis Coyle as someone being unfairly held by the Taliban, not charged with any crime, that he needed to come home. I think it certainly helped to know that Dennis's family had been working behind the scenes in Washington quietly with President Trump's team and with people on Capitol Hill to try and get him home. And I think that maybe was the last final push that was needed to get that out on a national and international scale and to get him home finally this morning, actually. He was on the plane last night and he landed this morning. So very grateful to have him home. And of course, you know, he's one of 100 Americans who've been freed in the past 15 months under President Trump's second term, which is absolutely remarkable. And although we're happy he's home, there are still Americans being held, so we want them home as well.
I'm talking to Katie Pavlich for News Nation. So, Katie, what was the excuse that the Taliban was using, if they needed an excuse, to hang on to Dennis Coyle?
They made no real excuse. They took him from his apartment. They didn't charge him with any crime. They were engaging in what Marco Rubio, Secretary of State and National Security Advisor, has explained in detail as hostage diplomacy, where these, you know, either rogue states or governments like Russia, Afghanistan, others deliberately take Americans for no reason at all and hold them for political leverage. In this case, the Taliban released a statement saying that they were releasing Dennis Coyle for humanitarian purposes at the end of Ramadan. It was for goodwill, but the fact is they should have never taken him in the first place. And they are still holding two Americans, Mahmoud Habibi and Paul Overby, in Afghanistan. So they're working on getting them back as well. But they made no excuses, really. They just did it for the purposes of political leverage.
Now, Katie, you and I are on the same page politically, I think, for the most part. I can't think of any big differences. Were you tempted to run that soundbite from Joe Biden in, what was it, August of 21, where he said, we're not leaving Afghanistan until every single American is out of Afghanistan?
Oh, wow. I mean, the way that the Biden administration left Afghanistan, as you know, is such a disgrace and remarkable consequences. Even today, it's insane that we are now, you know, having to deal with the Taliban as the government in Afghanistan after being there for 20 years of blood, sweat and treasure, Americans dying, being maimed, and for Joe Biden to leave the country that way and to allow the Taliban to regain power as they had when we went into Afghanistan that many years ago is just an absolute disgrace. So it's nice to see a different approach from this administration on that. But wow, crazy to think of how that happened and the disgrace what is the Afghanistan withdrawal with very few consequences. And I find it quite interesting now that a lot of the people in charge of that withdrawal are trying to give President Trump advice about how to handle Iran. It's laughable. I think he wants to be successful, so he should ignore all of you. And none of you are credible when it comes to talking about how to handle terrorists in the Middle East.
I'm talking to Katie Pavlich from Katie Pavlich on News Nation. So, Katie, I mean, is there anybody dumb enough back there to not understand that Donald Trump makes his own decisions and that if you come in with Afghanistan 21 as part of your resume, that Trump is not going to pay you any attention at all? Or do they still think, oh, no, I'm an important person. I've been around D.C. a long time and Trump will listen to me?
Well, I just remember that Washington, D.C. is a place where people fail up. So people are used to being rewarded for horrendous mistakes and decisions, thinking that they should get not only just another chance, but that they should be promoted for making horrible mistakes, including those that cost Americans their lives. So, you know, of course, they think they should weigh in. Jake Sullivan, who is the former National Security Advisor for Joe Biden, who, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before October 7th said the Middle East was as quiet as it's ever been, that their Iran diplomacy was working. He was out this week talking about how President Trump is not doing a great job with the current Iran situation, which of course is completely laughable. Nobody from the Biden administration on the foreign policy front should be taken seriously at all, not, of course, inside the Trump administration, but by media as well.
Well, and in fact, who are the Democrats going to run for president in 2 years? I mean, time's a-wasting, and they can't possibly think it's going to be Kamala or the guy who wrecked California. I mean, that doesn't seem like much of a choice.
Seems like the choice they're about to make. You know, I think they'll probably have a smorgasbord of people. Maybe AOC will throw her hat in the ring. Who knows? Oh, I think it'll be a pretty wide primary, and I think it'll be crazy because, of course, as you know, the left is beholden to the furthest left flank of their party at the moment. So they're all going to have to outdo each other with their ridiculous statements, including Gavin Newsom's wife saying that she would be the first partner if he were to ever be president rather than taking on title of first lady. It's absolutely absurd.
But, Katie, ordinarily I leave the families of politicians out unless they participate. You know, so I usually leave the kids of... But when it comes to his wife has been cashing in big time through an NGO that her husband keeps throwing lots and lots of state dollars to, and then she pulls six-figure salaries out of that thing. Doesn't she realize this is all going to become one big issue that's associated with his campaign?
Oh, 100%, especially now that Congress is focusing on fraud as a major issue this year. We have Chairman of the Oversight Committee, James Comer, on the show tonight. We're talking to him about exactly this California fraud where these NGOs, where the government, these local governments are stealing taxpayer money, federal taxpayer money, and laundering it through fake hostage programs, fake NGOs, through the homelessness industrial complex. And not only getting no results, but getting negative results, turning what they were trying, they claim they were trying to solve as a problem into a more significant problem that, oh, all of a sudden needs even more tax money for them to launder through these systems with no results. So it's, that will definitely be something that not Republicans will be highlighting, but I think Democrats who are doing opposition research for a primary will certainly hold over the Newsom's head.
Well, congratulations on the interview with Donald Trump, bringing up Dennis Coyle's name for the first time, and have fun with Jim Comer tonight. That should be an interesting interview. Katie, thank you very, very
Absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely. See you at 10 p.m. Talk
thank
to you tomorrow.
Ma'am.
Thanks.
That is Katie Pavlich tonight on News Nation at 10 p.m. In a moment, I'll get you your phone calls and emails. And a Washington man with 97 prior arrests just led police on a high-speed chase. Guess what happens? Why do they keep putting this guy back on the streets? We'll get to that next on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars Larson wants to hear from you, even if you disagree. Naysayers get to cut the line at 866-HEY-LARS. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Keep going.
Yeah, I got her.
You know what you're listening to? You're listening to it. I realize it's a little hard to translate those sounds into what was going on there. That is a man in Washington State with 97 prior arrests who just led the police on a high-speed chase. They finally caught up with him. And why does the system keep putting him back on the streets? I mean, imagine this. A guy who is a four-time convicted felon, 27 misdemeanor convictions, and 97 prior arrests. He's now charged with DUI, eluding police, and possession of narcotics, and yet they keep putting people like this back on the streets. It makes no sense whatsoever. Glad to be with you, and always glad to get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Let me go to Chuck, who's a naysayer. Hey, Chuck, on this show, for almost 30 years, naysayers have always gone to the head of the line. So what do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer today?
Well, I think Maria Cantwell has it right about the problems with the SAFE Act. And there's a lot of data that shows that non-citizens rarely register or vote.
Hmm. Where's that data come from, Chuck?
The Brookings Institute did a study recently of states that allowed mail-in voting, and they looked to see the percentage of non-residents registering was accounted to 0.00043.
The ones who got caught, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me this. Chuck, hold on. So I want to take Maria Cantwell, member of the U.S. Senate, at her word. She is a member of the Democrat Party, and she just stood up yesterday on the floor of the Senate and said, if the SAVE Act is passed, and it requires two primary things about voters. Number one, you have to be a citizen. Number two, you have to present picture ID. And the third one has to do with your ballot counting. Your ballot only counts if it arrives by close of business on election day. But about the voter, there are two requirements. One, you have to be a citizen. Two, you have to have picture ID. Why would she claim that if you put in those two requirements on a group of people that you tell me are all citizens, that we very rarely find anybody who's not a citizen, Why would she then claim 21 million people will be cut out of voting in the next election? Why would she say that?
I don't know where she comes up with that number.
I do.
I do. Tell me.
Okay. She even gave it up in the speech she gave that I ran some sound bites from. She said, why, we know these people are not non-citizens, that they are qualified to vote. How do we know that? She said, because they attest that they are able to vote. When they sign on the line, she says they attest. I could run the soundbite for you of her saying that. So, Chuck, it would be like saying if you were stopped while driving your car and you didn't have a driver's license, but if you knew that if the police officer could be told, why, officer, I have a driver's license, will you take my word for it? Now, do you know a cop in America who would take your word for it and not demand that you actually show him the driver's license?
Well, you know, Oregon had trouble. Well, no, that's unreasonable.
Nobody would do that, right? So why is it that a police officer wouldn't just take your word for it? If he says, I want to see your license, you say, I have a license, I just don't have it with me. Will you take my word for it? Why won't cops do that?
Let's stick to the facts about how many...
Maria Cantwell says, the reason we should believe these people are... Hold on, Chuck. The reason we should believe these people are citizens is because they say they're citizens.
And so when states have looked at, many states over the years have looked at the number of illegals voting was like 0000.
The ones caught. And Chuck, there's no, but Chuck, there's the problem. The ones caught. Because you offered up Oregon as an example. Let me give you Oregon as an example. 3 years ago, when you talk, I talked to the state of Oregon, how many non-citizens did they say they had on their voter rolls? Do you know what they said? Zero.
Yes.
They said zero.
1,204.
Hold on, Chuck. No, Chuck, you weren't listening. Three years ago, they said the number was zero. And then 2 years ago, we found out that it was thousands of people who were non-citizens registered to vote. Now, how did they find that?
1,240, to be exact, is what they say.
It was more than 1,600 by the time they were done all the counting. And by the way, Chuck, listen for a second. There are 3 million registered voters in the state of Oregon. They checked 1.7 million, and they found several thousand that were non-citizens. Do you know what they did to check the other 1.7 million voters? They didn't. They said, we're not going to check the other 1.7 million. Now, Chuck, you tell me, why do you suppose the Democrat Secretary of State of the state of Oregon said, we're not going to check the other voters to see how many are non-citizens, even though we've checked 1.7 million and we found thousands who are not citizens? Why do you suppose they didn't want to check the other 1.7 million?
I do not know, but the fact
I do, Chuck, a child could figure this one out. They don't want to check because they know they only found the thousands of people registered to vote who are non-citizens by accident. They found out because a liberal group out of Chicago, Illinois, called the state of Oregon and said, how do you sort out when you give driver's licenses to both citizens and non-citizens? How do you make sure the non-citizens don't get registered to vote? And the state of Oregon said, well, we just do. And so the group in Illinois said, well, we'd like to see the data. And this is, remember, a liberal progressive group. This is a group that identifies with the Democrats. They said, well, we want to see the information. So the state of Oregon gave them the information. That's how they accidentally found out they had thousands of non-citizens registered to vote. If you'd asked them the year before, how many non-citizens do you have? They'd have said, we don't have any. We know. We don't have any at all.
And they were wrong, and they looked at it.
Do you know why? Because you will never find a criminal who's committing a crime if you don't look to find the criminal committing the crime. If you don't look, then the crime might as well not exist. And that's what they're doing, is they're saying, gosh, there aren't too many people that we catch voting illegally. Well, do you ever look for people voting illegally? No, we don't look for them. And guess what? When we don't look for them, we don't find them. And you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome to...
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And
Lars.
Now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Now imagine this. You often see governments go after private sector companies and say to them, you have exposed your clients or your customers' data, and you're going to be punished because you didn't act appropriately to try to safeguard that data. So what happens when a government actually knows that your personal data was exposed as long as 7 years ago? And they did essentially nothing about that. I thought we'd talk about it with Joel Ard, who's an attorney with the Ard Law Group, who's representing William Black in this case. Mr. Ard, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
So tell me what happened back in 2019 and what the Washington Department of Licensing knew, and when did they stop knowing it?
Well, who knows when they stop knowing. I think government's great at forgetting things that they ought to know, aren't they?
Yeah.
What our investigation has teed up is that for a period of years, anybody could go into the License Express portal and change your driver's license information. And quite a lot of people did this to thousands of people in Washington, as far as our investigation has revealed. And now, we don't have that confirmed by Department of Licensing yet. We filed a tort claim notice, as you're required to do in Washington State before you sue. And we'll file suit against them in early May. But as we piece together what we learned in our investigation, it seems to be bookended by the launch and then relaunch of the License Express website starting in Labor Day 2018. They launched this thing. They said, this is great. You don't have to go to the Department of Licensing anymore. It's like having a DOL in your living room. Except it turns out that they left the door unlocked and anybody could come into the living room and deal with your data. It looks like they finally fixed it in February of 2025 when they took License Express offline for a week or 10 days. But in between there, it, as far as our investigation has revealed, and we've had lots of people reach out to us since we went public with it, anybody could get in through some sort of hack, change your address, your eye color, your height, your weight, and have a replacement license sent to them. And batches and batches of licenses were sent to addresses, usually in King County, but all over the state, of people who then are suffering identity theft. And the Department of Licensing didn't fix it and didn't make any sort of major public announcement about this, but just left it as a lingering problem for almost 7 years.
Now, if you're at the point where you're filing a tort claim, which people should know, that's the step you take before you file the lawsuit. But once you file a lawsuit, assuming the state doesn't say, you're right, we hurt your client and we'll pay your client, then you're going to have the ability to gain discovery. You're going to be able to ask for all their documents. Mr. Ard, do you have any sense of what it is they're going to claim was the reason that they knew about the problem, didn't do anything about the problem, and even tried to hide the problem is what you found? Do you have any idea why they did it that way instead of just fixing the problem?
You know, I don't. I certainly look forward to learning that from them, of what kind of excuse they might have for it. I am confident that we're going to find that they knew about batches, dozens, hundreds in some cases of driver's licenses being sent to single individual residential addresses, which obviously, you know, an apartment in Puyallup does not have 350 people living in it, but they would mail 350 licenses to it. I'm not really sure what went on with the major system upgrade that left this open. But, you know, I think an educated guess would be that they did do a major system upgrade and couldn't revert. That's not the best way to do that kind of tech upgrade, but I suspect that that's what we're going to learn, is that they did a major upgrade on their databases. Part of it was License Express. And when they learned about the problem, it was too late to shut the whole thing down and go back to an old, maybe less functional, but more secure system.
Yeah, but Joel, I mean, you run a small law group. I would imagine you have some IT needs, and when they do an upgrade on your IT system, don't they usually say, look, we're going to upgrade to this. We'll go to Windows 11 or whatever, and if it doesn't work, then we'll go back to the old system until we can figure out the problem. Isn't that pretty well standard operating procedure for doing computer upgrades? Or does Department of Licensing just not operate the rest of the way the rest of the world operates?
You know, that is standard, and you know, if you've got a system like that that's vital to you, I mean, I'll do things like I've got a spare laptop, do an upgrade on one and make sure that if it doesn't work, the other one's still functioning, right?
Yep.
I'm sure you do the same kind of thing.
I do.
So, I, again, I don't know what they're going to say. The only thing we heard from them was they sent out a spokesperson to say that nothing never happened to nobody. But I tell you, we've got a number of folks, some of whom are going to probably end up being named plaintiffs in the lawsuit, got a letter from the Department of Licensing that says, hey, you know, we've learned that your identity has been stolen. And although it really had nothing to do with us, we have cut off your access to License Express just as a precaution. Did have something to do with them, right?
Well, no kidding, but I'm talking to Joel Ard. He's an attorney with the Ard Law Group representing William Black. So in this case, if the state of Washington is going to argue it happened, it was a mistake for whatever reason, was this done by the state itself and its own programmers, or was it done by a third party that they hired to come in and do this work? Do we know?
You know, we're not sure yet. We do know that there was a contract with a group out of Colorado called Fast Enterprises LLC that had some amount of responsibility for the License Express system. Which parts were whose responsibility remains to be seen, and we're certainly going to look into that in discovery. Ultimately, though, you know, if I hire somebody to take care of my billing, but I bill wrong, it's on me, not on other people. I
get that, but at least the people of Washington could say, if it was a private company that made the screw up, even though it still comes back to the state could go to that company and say, we paid you a bunch of money, and we're not only are we not going to let you keep the money, but we may demand damages from you as well. Or is this just on workers at the Department of Licensing, and do they all still have their jobs?
You know, there's no job security like government job security. And when they've come out in response to the early press on this and said that, as far as they know, nothing bad ever happened, I'm guessing they haven't done much in the way of an investigation or terminated anyone. You know, we'll find out. We'll find out who ultimately was responsible for this. My claim, of course, is against the Department of Licensing, and we look forward to getting more fulsome answers from them in the very near future.
Let's hope so. That is Joel Ard. He's an attorney with the Ard Law Group representing William Black. Back in a moment. I'll be glad to get to your phone calls and emails. A woman delivered a living baby girl and then told the nurses, I want her to die. I'll tell you the rest of the story in a moment.
If you don't want to talk but want to be heard, email Lars at talk@larslarson.com. He actually will read it. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. I'm going to talk about an issue that involves the death of a baby, but this is not about abortion. Let me tell you why. Because we're talking about a baby that was actually born, and then she died. Now, the mainstream media would like you to believe this is an abortion story. It is not an abortion story, but I'm going to tell you why it is so significant that the mainstream media is working overtime to persuade people that a woman charged with murdering her own baby is somehow a victim of pro-life laws. I know, it's going to take some explanation. Bear with me. But in the meantime, if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And I want to give lavish credit to a young lady we've talked to before on this show, Jordan Boyd, and she writes for The Federalist. I don't have her with me today, but I thought she did a great job of breaking this one apart. We mentioned this story, at least in passing, about a week ago. I want you to consider, it involves a young lady by the name of Alexia Zantail Moore. And corporate media, as Jordan Boyd writes, wants to have Americans believe that the murder charges levied against this young lady are unprecedented, that they are unfair, and that it is all about abortion. Let me tell you how all this came to be. The attorney general, or sorry, the district attorney in Brunswick County, that's in Georgia, has brought charges, murder charges, against this young lady. Does it have anything to do with what's known as Georgia's Life Act, which has to do with abortion? It does not. It says that this woman was trying to kill her unborn baby using the abortion pills that have now become the standard way of doing about 60% of abortions in the United States. They are called misoprostol and mifepristone. Now, we've talked about both of those on the show, except this was not the death of an unborn baby. It was the death of a born baby, a baby that actually was born alive. And in fact, I'll quote Georgia Life Alliance Executive Director Elizabeth Edmonds. She told the Atlanta Journal and Constitution, that's the big newspaper in Atlanta, Ms. Moore is not charged with crimes under Georgia's Life Act. This innocent baby girl was born alive, and under Georgia law, her death is being investigated and prosecuted like any other death of any other child. Now, how did the baby end up dead? Well, Alexia Zantail Moore apparently was not happy about the fact that she was pregnant, and she decided to do a mail-order abortion pill, misoprostol, and she got the pill. Now, you can use that pill anywhere from 7 to 10 weeks after conception. How long had this baby been growing? 22 to 24 weeks. So, she took an opioid painkiller, and she took the misoprostol. Medical records show that she was more than halfway through her pregnancy, and she delivered the baby alive. At that point in pregnancy, Moore's unborn daughter was developed enough to survive outside the womb with medical intervention. Now, what happened to this baby? After an hour of trying to breathe, this born-alive baby girl with a beating heart died. And the arrest warrant indicates that the oxycodone she apparently took was detected in her baby daughter's blood. So this is one of the disasters that we've warned you is likely to happen. If you go back, say, 20 years, you have very few abortions in America that are done with pills. They were almost all done as a medical procedure in a clinic using a doctor performing the abortion. These days, about two-thirds of all abortions are done with pills. And we've raised the concern before that while the pills are supposed to be used only in cases where the baby has only been in the mom for 7 to 10 weeks, in this case, the woman decided at 22 to 24 weeks, I don't want this baby. Now, what did she tell the nurses that were trying to take care of mom when she was brought to the emergency room? The warrant for Moore's arrest says the baby was a human being born alive who survived for 1 hour. And yet, when you look at the way that CBS and People and others have reported on this, they kept referring to this baby as a fetus, even though the baby had been born. And guess what? The mom who was in the emergency room was telling the nurses, I know my infant is suffering. I'm the one who did the abortion. I want her to die. That's what this mother told the nurses in the emergency room. She wanted that baby to die. Only thing is, once the baby's been born, it comes under a different set of rules than when it's unborn, whether you like that or not. I mean, some of you will probably remember the medical doctor who used to be the governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, the one who was asked about abortion. He said, well, you should be able to make a decision about abortion up to and after the birth of a baby. And there were people saying, no, 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 he misspoke. You misunderstood what he was talking about. He's only talking about unborn children. Well, one of Moore's friends told the police that the woman had downed abortion drugs because she didn't want another child. But when her baby was born alive, she had an entirely different problem. The drugs she had taken would take the life of that baby. And at that point, the baby is a human being. No debate about it at all. Now, in Georgia, it is common for somebody to be charged with murder, declaring that a person commits the offense of murder when he or she causes the death of another human being, irrespective of malice. That means her possession and use of oxycodone, which is a felony punishable by prison time, automatically makes the woman eligible for murder charges. And yet the mainstream media would like you to believe this is not about murder. This is about abortion, about whether or not this woman has the right to do this. And this is going to be one of the problems. We've already had the phenomena just a couple of weeks ago of a young man who decided he didn't want his girlfriend to be pregnant, so he got some of these same kind of pills and secretly gave them, allegedly, to his girlfriend to end her pregnancy without her knowledge. This is the kind of murderous acts that you're going to see happening, because now abortion is as easy as getting a pill through the mail or online. Back in a moment, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Surrounded by Northwest liberals.
I cannot stand these morons any longer. If you don't come with me this instant, I shall run amok.
Come to the place where common sense prevails. The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, the IRS just released the numbers, and Americans are voting with their feet when it comes to their financial fortunes. Are blue states too stubborn to see what's actually either killing them or going to kill them down the line? I thought we'd talk about it with Jack Salmon, who's a research fellow and a Gibbs scholar at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Jack, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Lars. Thanks for having me on.
So we have a lot of people who are packing up and simply leaving, and it appears to be that taxes and income are the motivators in most cases. Is that fair to say?
Yes. So the IRS released its state migration data last year for the tax years 2022 through 23, and it shows a trend that we've been seeing pretty persistently in recent years, which is people primarily voting with their feet, moving from high tax jurisdictions, particularly in the Northeast and on the West Coast, moving to the Sun Belt low tax states that are moving towards lower tax rates, moving towards flat taxes, or phasing out their income taxes altogether.
So when they do this, are these states that are raising the taxes this way, they must have some of their own experts saying this is going to not work out well in the long term. In the short term, you may get away with it, but in the long term, you're going to end up in a spiral where the very people you're taxing are going to move away from the taxation, and then you're just going to have to, find a new group of people to tax?
Yeah, well, that's the part of the story that sort of leaves you wrecking your brain, trying to figure out what are these policymakers thinking in these states. I think a large part of what we've seen is there was a huge windfall that came in 2020 when the federal aid, the COVID money went out to the states. I think some states acknowledged that was a temporary sort of helicopter drop of funds. But other states took that as sort of permanent funding and they launched all these new programs. They expanded existing social programs at the state level. And so they've ended up at a point a year or two later where they've got these huge budget gaps. And the only way they seem to be looking to close those gaps is by taxing the highest earners in the state. But obviously, as we're seeing with the data, that isn't working. Just to give an example, just to focus on the Northwest for a moment. So
please.
Washington State, only 5 years ago, Washington State was one of nine states in the U.S. that didn't have an income tax. So in many regards, it was an attractive state for business or for individuals who want to start a business or increase their income or be innovators and entrepreneurs. So that's just 5 years ago. In 2022, they imposed a 7% capital gains tax on high earners. They added an additional 9.9% bracket onto that tax a couple of years ago. And now, sitting on the governor's desk, is a proposal to impose a 9.9% income tax on people earning $1 million or above. Now, if you combine all these tax burdens in the state of Washington, including sort of local and city taxes, the top marginal tax rate is about to go up to 18% in the state of Washington. Wow. Now, if you also include federal taxes, that's 58% top marginal rate for the highest earners. That would be higher than California and New York State. So it's difficult to try to sort of comprehend what exactly it is they're thinking, because they don't get the revenues that their plans sort of assume will be bringing in. And what we do see from the IRS data consistently is that the highest earners tend to pack up and leave. And most of them are going to states like Florida, Texas, states with no income tax, and others are moving to other Sunbelt states that have low competitive rates.
And by the way, if they don't get that message, Jack, and they're told you're not going to get the money because the people you are planning to tax have left, is their natural inclination going to be then to say, well, then we have to lower the thresholds and tax an even lower group of people economically? So in other words, if we're taxing millionaires now, we got to tax the half millionaires or the quarter, the people making $250,000 a year. Won't that be the natural inclination of these folks who don't get the message that when you tax people, the people you're taxing are going to leave, they're going to move away?
Logically, yes. I think another aspect of what motivates these policymakers is more ideological. So it's not necessarily logical. It's the entire eat the rich sort of ideology that's motivating a lot of more progressive policymakers. So that's definitely also a factor. So it's not so much that they care about the sort of logical outcome. It's more about making a point. That's concerning. But if these blue states want to continuously expand their social programs and increase government spending, I mean, California has grown its state spending by 68% since 2019 alone. Washington has doubled its state budget in the past decade. If they want to continue becoming this sort of Europe-like welfare state, then they're going to have European tax bases to fund it. And that means, ultimately, taxing the middle class significantly. Of course, they don't want to do that because that's not politically popular. But chasing away millionaires simply isn't going to solve their problems.
No, and the fact is, when you start taxing the lower groups, the upper income groups have a greater ability to just pack things up and leave. I mean, it's the middle class that might have the tough time when you say, well, can you afford to quit your job, find a new job somewhere else, sell your current house, pack your family up? If you're a multimillionaire, it might be a lot easier. If you're middle class, it might be very difficult. So at some point, they're going to land on the class of taxpayers that can't afford to leave. And they'll just have to be taxed into what? Into poverty?
Well, that's probably the most dire, worst possible outcome. It's a little depressing to think about. But, you know, we do see this in international examples. We do see this in European states. We see the economic stagnation. We see the entrepreneurs kind of just shrugging their shoulders and giving up. And we don't see these sort of these significant innovations that we see in the U.S. in many European nations. It's because of these massive burdens on the middle class, the overregulation, the overtaxation. But you're also right that the highest earners, the richest, they tend to be the most sensitive to changes in taxation, even small marginal changes in taxation. We also see this in California with the now proposed one-time. It won't be one time, but the one-time wealth tax that's being proposed in the state. economist at the Hoover Institution did an analysis of the assumed revenues that the proponents of that tax say it would raise. They said it would raise $100 billion. So they looked at the number of billionaires in the state that this tax is supposed to apply to. And yeah. The Forbes list said there was 212, and that was what the proponents used. But actually, they found that at least three of those billionaires were no longer living in the state before the petition even came about.
No doubt. That is Jack Salmon. Jack is a research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome to